And it is today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon in South Florida. And today we're in our at your service mode. This time the topic is pet welfare and care. We'll be taking calls and email. In the studio is veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, who heads Kendall's Sable Chase Animal Clinic. Welcome to you, Doctor. You ready for another hour of skilled advice?
Absolutely.
Also with us is canine behaviorist and trainer, and also cat behaviorist, if I'm correct, right?
A little bit.
Adele Miedes, and he operates K9 Advisors. Both are ready for your questions at 866-247-9576.
800.
Oh, sorry. I'm giving the pledge number because I've been... Okay. 1-800. Don't listen to me. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Or you can email us radio@wlrn.org.
And keep the emails short and sweet.
Yes, as possible. And as always, we have tons to cover and things will go where they will. But we're going to talk today about ways to introduce a new pet into a household, be it with an existing pet, a dog with a cat, cat with a dog, whatever. So want to begin with cats and dogs?
Well, the program we had last time actually ended with the summary that when you're trying to look for a pet, let yourself choose the pet that fits in with your lifestyle as it is, as opposed to what you think it might be. And the idea there is really pick a pet that fits with your life now, not as your life as you would want it to be. Don't get a dog that's too high drive if you live in a tiny little condo or a shoebox studio. But now you have your pet. So now
we also gave an admonition not to get pets for holiday for gifts.
Exactly.
Right? For the holidays.
But you know, we all make decisions, some for better, some for not. But at the end of the day, now we have a pet. How do you introduce that pet into your life and make it a success? A couple of things to bear in mind. Everybody needs to be on the same page. Everybody needs to be consistent with what behavior is allowed and not allowed. You can't have one person allowing the dog to jump onto your lap if the rule is the dog isn't allowed to jump up. The dog will basically go for the area of least resistance, and that will be the norm. And you'll confuse a dog, especially if there's one rule for one person, one rule for another.
Just like with children.
Exactly. So consistency, and you might even want to have a family meeting about what is and is not cool around your dog so that everybody's on the same page. Feeding routines are crucial. Feeding in meals rather than free feed, very important. Part of that is routine, which again is very important for a pet. Part of that is imposing a sense that the dog has to live within your world rather than the other way around. We should never be free feeding our pets, because that allows a dog to dissociate the act of providing food from the owner.
I guess it brings up regularity also when you go for a walk.
Right, and that's it follows on to the next point. I find that for the last 8 years, my little dachshund goes potty within 20 minutes of being fed. That's fantastic control for me, because it means I can get up, feed her, have a shower, walk her, and then she's done. So regular potty breaks, that's especially important with housebreaking puppies, making sure that you're consistent, patient, and that everybody's on the same page. And of course, just a quick segue on training puppies, positive reinforcement is key. Some of the old-fashioned things like rubbing their nose in it and using the rolled-up newspaper, nobody believes that anymore. It's all about being patient, being consistent, bringing the dog outside, giving lots of time to do their business outside, and positive reinforcement, so that you're teaching the dog what is accepted in your world, and so they don't go through life thinking that their name is No-No Bad Dog.
What about cages for puppies to introduce them into the house?
Generally, it's a good idea. It's not good in all cases, but crate training is one of the most predictable...
Crate training, I didn't mean to say cage.
That's okay. crate training is one of the most predictable ways of being able to housebreak a puppy. Two key factors in housebreaking a puppy is reduction of living space, which the crate training allows, and the other one is increased supervision. So when the dog is out of the crate, they will be on a leash with the individual around the house, getting used to being around the house, and generally they do not want to do things in front of us. They want to kind of sneak off to a corner somewhere, or sometimes even go to the door and do things at the door early on when you're trying to teach them. So crate training is generally a very positive thing. On the flip side, there are some people, one particular client that I'm working with right now, that keep the dogs in the crate for way too long. This particular dog is spending about 2 hours a day out of the crate, and the rest of the time he's in the crate. Yes, this is a Doberman with a lot of energy.
Is it okay to put him in the morning and go to work and then come back in the evening and let him out? Or?
Typically not with a puppy. They need to come out more. Yep. A lot of people get puppies, Dr. Kupke was saying, they may not have the lifestyle to really have puppies or to go through the puppy stage. They need to be able to get that puppy out, depending on the age, but typically an 8 to 10 week old puppy needs to go out every couple hours.
Before we take all these calls that we already have and emails, I just want to, because we're talking about housebreaking, talk about litter box training, because you have some pointers with a litter box that I think we should convey.
Well, there's an old rule that I still think holds true. One litter box per kitty plus one for the house. And that's a bit hard if you've got a lot of cats, but the idea behind it is that some cats are extremely fastidious. I have friends who won't go to a public convenience. so why is it surprising that there are cats out there that won't use a litter box that's used by another cat?
So, convenience, you mean a public restroom?
Right, right.
Okay, that's that British coming out.
That's that British coming out. I was going to say loo, and that would have really confused you.
And the other thing about the covers, talk about that.
Covers are very appealing to people because it keeps the smell and the mess inside. Unfortunately, covers also keep the mess inside, and that means that the smell for the cat is annoying. They don't like it. So especially when you're trying to train a cat to get used to using a litter box, never a good idea to have a covered litter box. The other thing, too, is out of sight, out of mind. In my experience, covered litter boxes aren't cleaned as often, and that's also going to contribute to a problem because most cats aren't going to use a filthy litter box.
Yeah.
You know, you should be scooping that litter box at least once a day, twice a day, after every number two if you can.
And if there's, if you scoop it regularly, there's no odor anyway,
Bingo.
So you don't need a lid.
Right, right. And finally, you'll find that some cats have what they call a substrate preference. What that means is that they, for personal reasons, prefer one kind of material to another. And if you have a cat that isn't using a litter box, it might be simply that they hate the material that's in the litter box. And there's so many different brands to choose from. Just work yourself through them until you find one your cat likes.
Okay. What about those motorized jobs, the litter boxes?
You know, I've heard of them. I've never seen them. I think they're still pretty pricey. But, you know, I can see problems with it. Perhaps the cat might be frightened by the motor. Perhaps
it doesn't start till the cat leaves.
It waits till you leave. But I did have one, and it's hard when you have multiple cats, and it's also one of them was a little old, so it would urinate on the motor. And they just are not as clean, and I don't recommend them either.
Okay. How about some calls?
Okay,
let's go to Scott in Fort Lauderdale. He wants to talk about cat litter box training. Scott, you're up.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
We have a cat who was using the litter box in the bathroom upstairs, and so we could cut a cat door into the garage, which we've now done. But occasionally now, once a week or once every couple of weeks, the cat will still go upstairs and just find the corner of our bedroom as a bathroom instead of using the litter box. And we're cleaning the box pretty religiously, like you mentioned. So we're trying to figure out why she's doing that. My wife thinks it's something to do with getting attention or angry that the box has been moved, or it certainly can't be confused that the box has moved. So I'm wondering what your take on that is.
Well, unfortunately, my My solution would be to put a litter box back in the place that the kitty was used to, only because cats tend to get used to certain patterns of behavior. And the fact that the kitty was using the litter box, albeit not in the position that you wanted it, might actually be better than allowing her to soil that area. Bottom line is, most of us in our homes have more than one bathroom, and cats kind of claim the same privilege.
Yeah, that seemed like the likely response, except that you know, the whole reason for moving it out of the bathroom in the first place is we just didn't want our cat box in the bathroom and preferred it in the garage. And she seemed to adapt initially, but we keep getting these incidents now and again where she just decides she's going to go up. And it's not even in the bathroom where the box was, it's just somewhere upstairs. So connection, you know.
Sorry, just real quick to add to that, I have found that to be a big problem before. With different people with cats, when they're moving the litter box over. It also happens with puppies when they're trying to go from the paper to the outside. They generally just do a very abrupt change. What you may want to try is to put that litter box back in that bathroom, and then on a daily basis move it over a little bit. The first day you might move it over a couple feet, following day a few more feet, and little by little keep it within a few days' time where you're moving the litter box slowly out of the area, and then eventually have the cat go to where you want the litter box to be.
Yeah, somebody else recommended that too. That's going to be a long journey though.
It is.
To the downstairs.
Yeah, but it's worth it.
Yeah, okay, well, thank you.
Okay.
We have to take a break?
Yes, we do.
Okay, it's At Your Service, Pet Edition, Topical Currents, and we'll come back and take more calls and emails. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're At Your Service with Pet Questions with Dr. Ian Kupke of the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall and Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. Number 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743.
We've got a few lines open.
Yeah, a lot dropped off for some reason. 9576. And email is radio@wlrn.org. This is on the same subject from Oscar. We adopted two male cats together about 5 years ago. About a year ago, one or both of them started to spray in the house. We just adopted a rescue puppy 2 weeks ago, a 4.5-month-old male. The cats are not adapting well to the puppy, and spraying is continuing along with non-use of the litter box.
What's funny, during the break, Adele and I were talking about this, and Adele made the point that the provoking issue with spraying is often change. And what bigger change than a puppy entering a cat's world?
It wants to lick them.
Yeah, you know. And changes that we don't seem that big a deal because we have other things going on in our lives, but you're actually messing with their universe. So literally, you've brought a puppy into a situation which was already unstable with two male cats and marking issues. Unfortunately, there's a lot to the whole marking issue. As I said before, one litter box per cat plus one for the house. Determining where they mark is very important. A lot of the time, outdoor feral cats that you're not even aware of being around will be perceived as a threat by the male cats indoors, and so they're actually marking territory in response to marking that's taking place outside. A lot of the time, it's related to basically an issue between the cats.
And also, are they neutered, right?
And that's number one. Should have said, really, that neutering, top of the list. You have to neuter cats. So you can't have a male cat indoors. It never works. Never.
Okay.
And we'll go back to the phones. This is Barbara. She has a problem in Delray Beach. Hi, Barbara. Barbara.
Oh, I'm here. Thank you. Yes, my 12-year-old Doxy is as good as gold. However, recently he started licking the floor like mad. We thought maybe he likes the taste of the pine sol, the floor liquid, but he seems to do it when my fiance comes home. So I'm wondering if it's showing jealousy or something or other, and nothing we can do can get him to stop. except bodily pick him up and put him someplace else.
Barbara, one of the reasons that dog is man's best friend is because they don't know jealousy. It's really a lot of times when they do the licking behavior, it's really some sort of anxiety, sometimes out of excitement. That anxiety can be managed by giving the dog something else to do. This is real specific because you've already noticed that when this person comes in, your fiancé, when they come in, then the dog is showing that kind of excitement and starts licking the floor. It would be a good idea when that person comes in, depending on the kind of energy that dog is getting once that person comes in, it would be good that the dog associates it with something more positive, such as licking a marrow bone, for example. So you give them an alternative when the person comes in. You might do that, or you might get a little peanut butter and put it on on one of those little Nyla bones that are knobbed, and then freeze it so that you can give it to him and he can go to town on that for a little while.
Right. The problem is he's a little overweight, so I want to stay away from the peanut butter.
And sure, the marrow bone would probably be a better option.
Nyla bone, yeah. That's good, yeah. I thank you very much. I didn't think of that. I thought he was jealous, and I attribute all the emotions that humans have to animals. So I don't know why jealousy wouldn't be one of them, but if you say man's best friend isn't jealous, I'll take your word for it.
They don't know jealousy. They know pack order, which a lot of times we as humans interpret it as jealousy.
But I've seen if a member of the household, when the dog is there, says, "Oh, nice Bonnie, nice Bonnie," the dog will get all excited and be seemingly jealous.
It seems
of having the affection
to us, but there's two key factors that the leader of the pack controls, and that's food and attention. And with attention, when you pay attention to one member of the household, even another animal in the household, and the other animal is coming in, then clearly that animal is not clear as to who the leader is at that moment. And there's actually exercises that we do specific to that to establish some clear pack order.
And on we go. John, he's in Delray Beach also. Hi.
Hello. How are you today?
Good.
My question is, I have a dog, a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and it's a great dog. However, when it gets around other dogs, it will proceed to sniff the other dog's butt, but it won't allow the other dogs to sniff its butt, and it gets skittish and backs off, and I'm wondering how I can work with my dog.
Yes, that's quite specific. Dogs that don't allow other dogs to sniff their butts, those dogs are typically a bit insecure. I'm not sure if there was a bad experience that dog that you have has had before, but sniffing butts is actually equivalent to a handshake for us. That's
exactly.
We're glad, you know, we're not dogs, but basically. What we'll want to do in a situation like that is usually we cradle the dog with the leash. So using a 6-foot leash, the leash is on the collar. We bring the leash around the dog's belly and up, and we cradle the dog with the leash. And then we provide something that allows for that dog to be comfortable. Most of the time, if the dog has a good bond with you, it's actually your touch while the other dog gets to sniff. In most cases, dogs feel a little bit tense, a little uncomfortable at the beginning, but when you don't give them another option and you use a calm dog, not one that's going to come in and shove his nose in there, but use a calm dog to do this greeting, then your dog has a positive experience. After a few positive experiences, he's actually going to be better with that. That's actually very common work that I do, and I use my own dogs to help other people with their dogs with greetings.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for your
call.
Thank you. Let's take one more, then we'll go to the email. This is Eric in Miramar. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing? My wife and I sleep separately. I have a different sleep schedule, different work schedule, and I snore. So we have our different rooms, and our five cats, they're just as loving with me, if not more so, when I'm awake during the day, but at night, they insist on trying to sleep with my wife. When we will let them in, she'll leave the door open, And, you know, eventually, you know, they'll be sweet and tired and sleep, but eventually they'll wake up and play with each other, fight with each other, trying to crawl, you know, climb behind curtains, walk across her face, and generally just wake her up and disturb her. They won't come into my room at all. If we leave her door closed so that she can try and get some sleep, then they cry and meow and claw at the door and wake her up that way too. We're wondering, you know, is there any way, how can we train the cats to just either not be disturbing when they're in the room or to not be disturbing when they're out of the room? I figure, you know, we have to finally decide one way or the other, and probably leaving the door closed would be preferable, I guess. But they're a nuisance when we do that. So we're wondering, how can we train them to not be that nuisance? Mm-hmm.
Do they have any posts where they have a little, like, sleeping cages that are covered with, not cages, but rather like
beds.
Little caves or beds that are covered, and they generally have carpet?
Yeah, we have 3 cat trees.
And how many cats?
5.
Okay. So,
but he's asking if you have those beds, the cover, the beds, not the trees.
No, we have beds. We have the cat trees where there's, you know, different platforms that are covered, that are carpeted. But as a standalone cat bed that's covered, no, we don't.
Do you, do they use these cat trees?
Not really.
No. Okay. So what we need is we need to give the cats an alternative area for them to sleep in. And, cats are just so different. I find them even to be individually more individual than dogs themselves. So we really need to find what motivates your cats to be able to sleep in a different area. Maybe a covered bed. It may be a cat tree. So the idea is that you would put some of these in the room and get the cats used to going on there. And and then little by little transfer them outside the room.
We have a spare room that we just moved into a new house, and we have a spare room that we're not using. Should we leave a litter box and food in there and put all 5 cats in that room with all the trees and you know, maybe get a couple extra beds and just leave them in there for an entire night?
Well, what Adele was getting at was basically exactly that. Why not create a kitty playroom with this room? You know, put the trees in there, put some covered sleeping receptacles in there. Your veterinarian should be able to point you in the right direction. There's some pheromone diffusers that you can plug into the wall that create a sense of peace and comfort and happiness. I mean, that's a lot of cats to have in one place. So
yeah,
there may be some inter-cat issues going on. I think probably most cat behaviorists would focus more on environmental enrichment and basically giving them an alternative place to play and enjoy. And it sounds like you've got the space to do that. So I would give that a try, you know. And
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had tried to do that essentially with this room when we first moved in, and they just seemed to like to be around her during the night, and no matter what we try and do or what space we've tried to create, they always just end up wanting to be with her. But I guess we just need to double down on making that room a cat room. We were going to try and make it a guest room, but I guess the cats will take ownership of that place now.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
Adele, I have a question about cats. We know cats can't be herded, but can you walk them on a leash?
You know, some cats, I hear more and more of people walking their cats on a leash. They sell little harnesses for them. They sell little cat leashes for them. And I got to say, I have bunnies, and I have harnesses for the bunnies, and we live by the beach, and we take them in the sand, and they love to, the leashes for the bunnies are like bungee cords, and they love to just hop around.
Hmm.
While on a leash.
Were they rescue bunnies?
They are, yeah. All our animals are rescued. So some people do walk cats on a leash. From personal experience dealing with some cats with some aggression issues, there are some cats that should never, ever be on a leash.
But it might be the only way a cat that's always indoors can get out now and then.
True, in a safe way.
You have an email, Bonnie?
Yeah, we have a couple about this. Joy, I have four cats, and three of them are always beating up and chasing one. What can we do? I know of so many cases like this. What do you think?
Well, first of all, make sure that the one that's being beaten up doesn't have any medical issues. One of the things that I've seen professionally is that cats are very good at picking up signs of weakness in a group situation. And sometimes a kitty that's got an underlying medical issue will be rejected by the group. So that's the first thing to check out. Secondly, going back to the litter box issue, make sure there's enough litter boxes for the number of cats. Make sure also that there's a place for the victim, if you will, to retreat to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a part of the problem is people don't really have a very cat-friendly house, and that's where Adele was going with the with a little carpet-covered enclosure type thing. They make these sorts of things for cats, little cat habitats, where basically a cat can climb up a tree and hide in a hole, and then that cat's safe and also defensible because now he or she is in a three-sided structure and can control access and therefore feel safe. But, you know, other than lions, cats are generally solitary creatures. They don't really have the same group dynamics as dogs do, and you'll get this all the time. But I think if you look seriously at their world and try to look at it through cat's eyes and ask yourself, does the victim, the weakest one in the group, have anywhere to retreat to? Feeding separately. Don't try and make them feed out of one bowl. Make sure that they all have their own little bowls so that they can eat in peace.
And, of course, their own litter boxes.
And their own litter boxes.
Well, we have another one. Lewis says he had two cats for a long time, added a new cat to the house. They're not getting along. They're keeping them separate, but it's taken 3 months already. Is there anything they can do to hurry the process along?
No, not. You know, we have our own expectations and our own timeline, but animals don't. And I think one of the biggest lessons that being a veterinarian has taught me is patience, because cat time isn't the same as human time. You really need to be consistent with your expectations, but also realistic as to how long it's going to take. It goes back to what we were saying, one litter box per cat plus one for the house, separate feeding situations, and a place for them to retreat to.
Well, it looks like that one has. They're keeping them separate. So.
I mean, at Adele's point earlier, the biggest thing we see with these elimination issues with cats is change. You'll have a perfect situation, and then poof, new child, new puppy, new cat, and now you've got a problem. They don't adjust to change well sometimes.
And we'll move along. This is Dennis in Miami Beach. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering what the proper way is to introduce a puppy German Shepherd. He's about a little more than a year and a half old. How do I properly introduce him to our cat, our indoor cat, that's about 3 years old? Thank you.
A 1.5-year-old dog is already a teenager. So he's a little bit past the puppy stage. That's actually, if you were to say, the peak of when a dog would test their owners, that's about it, right about a year and a half, particularly with a shepherd as well. So one of the things that's really important before you get the shepherd and the cat together is that the shepherd has a clear understanding of who the leader is in a number of situations. Like, for example, when you're feeding, or if you can have your shepherd be at a down stay while you pet the kitty, maybe 10, 15 feet away, and your shepherd stays on a down stay. If you cannot get to that point, then I don't suggest you start having them meet, because what will happen is the second that the kitty gets a little nervous and moves quickly, the shepherd's going to go on prey mode after the kitty, and now you've got a bad association between the kitty and the shepherd, and then you got some fixing up to do. It's always better that you take your time, establish the control early on, and then be able to get the two animals to have, even if a very short meeting, but have a more positive meeting from day one.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
We have an emailer who has some answers, at least some recommendations. Zara says she's had cats, or he throughout, I guess she, throughout her life, and has run into the same situation with the man whose wife is being awakened. Each cat is different, but they sometimes learn from each other. With one, I had night lights on a timer with my sleep schedule. Took about a week, but if they woke me up before the light went on, I would turn around and muster something like, not now. Another cat that's super hyper, I play with him, make sure he gets exercise before bedtime, and it calms him down. And about beating up, just separate them, go back and forth, distract them. Each situation is unique, so the reason behind the fight needs to be determined to figure out what to do. I recommend reading Think Like a Cat by Pam Johnson Bennett. Think Like a Cat. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Interesting.
Pam Johnson Bennett. Takes time, but you can have a happy household.
Sounds like good advice. Just to add to that, if there are particular treats that, let's say, in a situation where there were four cats, one of them getting beat up more, if there's certain treats that they like more, little piece of tuna or sardines or any particular treat that they like more, then we would want to use that so that we can draw the weaker one in, give them the food, and the other ones don't get it. And you would call the weaker one by name so that that one is getting fed in front of the other ones, and the other ones are not getting fed. And by the same token, generally when you have a group of, let's say, cats going after the other, there's one trigger cat, the one that starts it, and then the other ones follow. So we may also want to feed some of the other ones that are following first before feeding the treats to the one that starts it.
And wouldn't that make them resent the weak one more?
No, they actually...
It gives them more power, makes them look like they're more powerful?
Yes, another great thing about animals. They don't really think that way as far as resentment goes.
Okay.
Food is a very primal source of showing pack leadership for most animals. And basically with the kitties, one of the things that they're going to learn is that they're not going to be in control in that situation. It's not the end all to everything, but it's a good starting point.
Okay.
And we'll move along. We've got David, another Delray Beach caller.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I have a 5-pound Yorkie. He's 10 years old. And when I go to work during the day, I leave him in my master bathroom with his own bowl of food and water and a place to lay down in there. Speaking that for him to wander around. He's not stuck in a cubby. When I get home and open the door, of course, he's very happy to see me. But I notice that he starts eating at that time, which is, pebbles kind of food, niblets or whatever. But he takes the food and brings it out into the bedroom where I am, either eats it there or drops it on the carpet, goes back in the bathroom, takes the food, picks it up, brings it back to where he was in the bedroom, either eats it and drops it. Before long, there's a pile of food sitting in the middle of the bedroom floor on the carpet. I'm wondering why he doesn't eat it, one, in the bathroom. Two, why does he wait till I'm home to eat? And why is he dragging it out?
You know why your dog is doing all of this?
I don't.
Because he can. You put that food down, he's going to have a certain time to eat it, and you take the food up. Don't leave the food down. That's very, very important. Some dogs get these little neurotic type behaviors. I have a little Chihuahua myself. She's actually 20 years old. She's also about 5 pounds. And she started some of that early on when she came into my house. She was 11 years old. She started some of that because she had no structure from the previous owner who had passed away. And I had to basically work on letting her know she's going to eat a couple times a day. Now she's a little older. She's eating 3 times a day. But basically, you want to put the food down, entice it perhaps a little bit. If he's eating just a kibble, you might put a little bit of chicken broth or something like that just to give it a little taste. Entice him a little bit to eat the food when you put it down. You give him a few minutes. If he doesn't eat it, you pick it up. Don't leave him with food there throughout the day. Put him on an eating schedule and let him know if he moves away from the food and he tries to get some kibble and move away, he's going to miss out on the rest of the food. And it will, for a dog that eats twice a day, it will take you less than 1 week to get him on a proper eating schedule. And especially for a little older, small dog, it's going to be really important that he's on a proper eating schedule.
But can an old dog learn new tricks?
Yes. Not only can they learn it, but they'll learn it faster than a new dog.
Okay.
Okay, David.
So the only reason I left the food down all day was I was told that the dog would become hypoglycemic because it's so small. So you're saying it's okay to put some food down in the morning and then again when I get back in the afternoon, and then that's it.
And you want to make sure you take that food up. If you notice that he doesn't eat for a couple of times, which might be like a whole day, you can give him a little bit of plain white yogurt. Just a little plain white yogurt to be able to settle his stomach and have some probiotics to help him while he's going to have additional acid buildup in the stomach because he's used to having food, and he's likely not going to have food if he didn't eat it when he was supposed to eat it.
Thank you very much for your answer.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we just want to say, first of all, are you available to stay for a few minutes after 2 o'clock?
Sure.
Do you want to?
What?
Can you stay? Because we can take the rest of the calls and the emails, and we'll post it online. Paul just let me know that he can stay an engineer.
I can't. I have an appointment.
Okay. So if you are on the phone or if you want to call in, we'll stay for another 10 or 15 minutes after and try to get to all of your calls and your emails. So that means after Joe does his close at 2 o'clock, you can wait, and right after that, we'll take the rest of the calls and emails, and it'll be posted online at WLRN.org. Okay?
And it's about time for a break.
And it's about time for a break on today's Topical Currents. We are at your service with pet issues, and we'll be right back.
How much is that dog in the window? The one with the wagony tail.
Paul.
Patty Page, of course. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, also Dr. Ian Kupke, and canine behaviorist Adele Mieres. And we'll go back and take a call. Then we also have some emails to get to. Kathy in Jupiter, hi.
Hi there, how are you today? Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to talk to you real briefly, and Dr. Ian, get maybe his feedback on it, on a product that's called the Piddle Place. And actually, it's our product, and we're not trying to be self-serving, but I just wanted to share it with our listeners. It's something that came up as I worked as an ER nurse, and I was stuck in the hospital sometimes for 12 hours, and I have a dog that I used to have to call neighbors to let him out. So instead, we came up with this sanitary indoor dog toilet, and my cat uses it also, that has a bioenzyme, kind of like a porta potty on a boat that you pour down in the base, and it has a turf that's real porous that sits high above it, and so all the pet waste goes down to a bottom chamber where the product, the bioenzyme, neutralizes it. It has a DOS in it that eliminates odors, and it lasts for a week. And then just once a week, you put the lid down on it, like you guys put the lid down on a toilet, right? And you take it to the bathroom, and you open the valve and drain it, so you never have to come in contact.
Give the name of the product again, and people can Google it if they want, because it's awfully complicated to understand the way you're describing it.
I'm sorry. It's called the Piddle Place, P-I-D-D-L-E. P-L-A-C-E.
Okay.
Okay, and they can just right. Google that?
Yeah, I'm sure they can.
Okay. All right, thanks All right, for
thank
calling.
You. Thank you for letting me share it with you.
Okay. And Jim writes, his 2.5-year-old male tabby loves to be around us, super friendly, generally well-behaved, but sometimes he just needs to nip when he's being pet. Happens at different times, different situations, usually when he's reaching over past his head, and almost never when he's on his lap. He's learned that he knows we don't like it, but it's a compulsive behavior for him, and he can't stop himself, despite it meaning the end of a scratching session, which he regrets. Why is he doing this?
The petting over the head for a lot of animals, even though it's very natural for us, it's not that natural for them. When we're petting them over the head, a lot of times, especially some of the animals that may piddle or show other anxious or submissive.
He says when he's reaching past over, when he reaches past his head.
Over his head.
Over his head.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
The best thing that they could do here is not generate that behavior, not create that behavior. The petting on that particular animal should be under the chin, and it should be to the side, meaning from the side of the body of the individual. Instead of leaning forward over the animal, you would, from the side, call him over, turn your hand a little bit and pet him on the bottom side of the chin and move away and have him come to you and give him a little pet and move away so that he's coming to you. You're giving him a little pet and you move away. You're not going to put the animal in a position to do any piddling or any anxious type scratching after.
Okay.
Okay, and we'll move along to Don. He's been on a long time. Don in Miami. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to ask about some feed control. I have a dog that spends about 80% of the time outside, and we bathe her usually once a week at the most, like every other week. And no matter what I do, how I treat the yard with basically everything that Home Depot sells on the shelf, the dog's on front line, but that only lasts for like maybe a week. It keeps her clean, and then she's just infested again. Is there anything that's safe that can take care of keep an outside dog free of fleas?
Well, that's a good question. You have to understand that the world of anti-parasitic medication, there's a bit of a life cycle to any product. Eventually, there will be resistance seen in a population. So what you need to do is basically, when you find that one product doesn't work, go see your veterinarian and get the current best recommendation, which will change over time. Currently, the favorites with my clientele, probably top of the list, is Trifexis. It's an oral product. That means that 100% of it is getting into the dog's body. You're not worrying about a topical product being smeared off or rolled off or washed off. And it advertises 100% flea control once a month. And by far, that has been the most impressive product out there.
What's the name of that again?
Trifexis.
Okay.
I've been very happy with it. Both my dogs are on it, and I never see a flea. And seriously, that's your best bet. Environmental control isn't always possible. If your land is huge, it's going to cost you a fortune. So I would say that's your best bet. Once a month, every month.
Great, thank you.
Sounds like good advice. It can be horrible, the fleas in South Florida.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a emailer, Javier. I'll be getting a new golden retriever puppy by the end of the month and have been doing research into what is the proper age to spay the puppy. The more I read, the more I think the best thing to do is not spay them. Particularly with female dogs, the evidence in recent studies point out that spaying females decreases certain issues but greatly increases the chance for cancer. What are your thoughts?
Wow. Well, you know, when I was younger, I used to go to the library to find out the information I needed, and what I was reading was generally reputable because everything that I was reading was published and had gone through a certain editorial process in order to be published. Nowadays, we have Google, and unfortunately, there's no editorial process, which means that what we consider research, i.e. looking up stuff on the computer, doesn't always get us advice that's correct or even meaningful. The current medical recommendation is universally recommended. Recommendation is to spay female dogs. You reduce the risk of breast cancer later in life. You remove the risk of reproductive tract problems later in life. There's no good reason to not spay a female unless you're a breeder or some other professional dealing with high-end genetics for breeding, for showing, and so forth. And the best time to breed a dog to spay a dog is about 4 months of age, before the first heat, and that's pretty much universally agreed. Every veterinarian I know, every veterinary publication I read, is still on that page. There is stuff out there that says otherwise, but I've seen no medical peer-reviewed articles to support anything to the contrary.
Okay, Javier.
Okay,
so
we're very short on time. This is Kevin in Miami. Hi. Kevin.
Kevin, are you there?
Okay. Then we go to Sandra in Del Rey. These Del Rey callers today.
Yeah.
Very short on time, Sandra. Put it in a nutshell.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a disabled person, and I have two cats, brother and sister, and they poop at night on the kitchen floor. And I have three litter boxes. and I believe I have enough boxes. My roommate passed away a year and a half ago, and I'm having a hard time speaking, but that's how I am. And then their triplet brother passed away a week after my roommate died. And I can't get them to stop pooping on the kitchen floor.
Okay, Adele, what's your advice?
They only do it at night.
Mm-hmm.
They only do it at night. One suggestion, just right off the bat to try to get to the core of the issue, take those litter boxes and put them on the kitchen floor where they're pooping and try to get them to poop inside the litter box in the same areas that they're used to pooping right now. And then we can worry about moving the litter boxes to other areas that are more convenient for you.
Well, it's certainly been an interesting hour. A lot of behavioral problems we've gotten into.
Yes. And let's give out contact information. And let me just say, we have about 4 or 5 emails. We have a couple of calls left.
Stay on the line.
Stay on the line. And we will get to your calls. It will be on our website, WLRN.org. So stay on the line after 2 o'clock, and we will get to you. Dr. Ian Kupke is owner and lead practitioner of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. The website is Sable, that's S-A-B-A-L, ChaseAnimalClinic.com. SableChaseAnimalClinic.com. And the phone number is?
305-595-1450.
Okay. And Adele Mieres is the owner of K9 Advisors. That's K, the number 9, advisors.com. And we thank you for being here with us today, as always.
WLRN.org for the podcast.
Yes, and for links.
And that's our At Your Service edition. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical supervision by online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads of this and other programs at our website, WLRN.org. More information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program begins with the current status of homelessness in South Florida with Homeless Trust board members. Also, Linda Gassenheimer with a 30-day heart-helping plan. And today's calendar, all music. On this day in 1925, 89 years ago, the birth of jazz sax giant James Moody in Savannah, Georgia. Moody's Mood for Love. He performed 2 live broadcast concerts on WLRN in the 1990s. He died in 2010. And on this day in 1928, 86 years ago, the birth of Antoine Fats Domino in New Orleans. Ain't That a Shame, Walking to New Orleans, and Poor Me. He was rescued by a Coast Guard helicopter in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. One more while we walk the line. On this day in 1932, 82 years ago, the birth of country music giant Johnny Cash, the man in black in one of my favorite towns, Kingsland, Arkansas. Cash's first band was called The Barbarians. So we leave with this thought from Fats Domino, whose Fat Man single in 1949 may well have been the first rock and roll record. Quote from Fats Domino, "A lot of fellows nowadays have a B.A., M.D. or Ph.D. Unfortunately, they don't have a J.O.B. Stay tuned for the podcast on our website. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, stay tuned now for Here and Now from NPR News.